Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 182 of CJ Evolution. Patrick here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you are doing, wherever you're at, thank you for tuning in. Maybe you're lifting weights on the treadmill, commuting to and from work. Maybe you're on patrol. Thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women who protect us day in and day out in a very difficult environment. You have much support. Keep up the fantastic work. You know, one of the things I've learned over the years is you got to have a good sense of humor if you're doing this job, especially first responders, law enforcement. Not that you won't be successful if you don't have a good sense of humor, but I've learned to laugh more over the years, not at certain situations, but mainly at myself and the jokes that officers play on each other and some of the stories that I've amassed over the years. Vic Ferrari is an author. He's a veteran of NYPD of 20 years. He's written two books, and he's on the show again. He was first on the show January 5th of 2016, episode 56, and he just had some amazing, funny stories about his time at the NYPD. Not poking fun at the NYPD, a great organization, but some of the stories that he's amassed over the years and what he has witnessed. And he's put pen to paper and he's written two books. He's going to talk about them in this great episode. So I give you the one, the only, Vic Ferrari. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my good friend Vic Ferrari on the show. Vic is the author of Dickheads and Debauchery and Other Ingenious Ways to Die. It was a very famous book that came out in 2016. He's a former NYPD detective who retired after 20 years of distinguished service. He's a former Bronx resident who now resides in Florida. And I am so glad Vic is back on the show. He's going to talk about his new book, which is NYPD Through the Looking Glass, Stories from Inside America's Largest Police Department. Vic, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Pat. How are you?
Well, thank you for reaching out to me a couple weeks ago, and I know you're busy. I'm glad you're here. So I know I give a little bit of a bio. Anything else you want to add to that so the listeners know who Vic is?
Vic is a retired NYPD detective who did 20 years up in the Bronx and Harlem and has become an author and moved to sunny Florida where I eat subpar food and I doubled down and got another Irish wolfhound, and it's like having an occupying force in your house, and yeah. I'm doing great.
That's awesome. Now, we talked about, and by the way, Vic, I failed to mention this, Vic was in episode 56 of CJ Evolution. I'll have that linked up to the show notes after the show, and you can hear my first episode with Vic. And everybody equates, Vic, you know this, the NYPD, you know, I think it's the biggest department in the world, right? Biggest municipal department?
Yes.
So what was it like working for the biggest police department, municipal police department in the world?
It's like getting, and I didn't realize this when I got hired, but it's like getting a ticket to the greatest show on earth.
Yeah.
You're just going to see things, and no matter how active you were, or you're a type of cop that doesn't like getting involved in things, you're going to see things and hear things and experience things that would just blow people's minds.
Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what is the, on a daily basis, what is the call load? I mean, it's got to be insane. There's millions of people in New York City, millions of people in the outskirts of New York City. What would a typical day as far as call load look like? I know you were a detective, but you were a patrol officer at one time.
Sure.
What does it look like?
Again, I've been retired 10 years, but mm-hmm. Let's go back 20.
Yeah, go back 20.
When I was on patrol and pre-Giuliani, when he kind of tamed New York City. You take like a busy precinct in the South Bronx, okay? On a 4 to 12, they turn out maybe anywhere between 12 and 15 cars. And in one precinct.
Yeah.
And you're talking about maybe just a couple of square miles. And on a busy Friday or Saturday night, they would go into what's called backlog. Backlog is when they start holding more than, I think it was like 10 or 15 jobs. But I mean, you'd hear it on the radio, like a precinct going into backlog and the dispatcher saying, we're holding 20, we're holding 25. And then what would happen was cars from other precincts would come in and they'd start picking up jobs for that precinct, but then they would go into backlog. So it was something like you were drowning in calls. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing for guys to give back calls from the radio car and never go into the location if something sounded like nonsense, because there was just no way they were ever going to get out of the back lot.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? I'm sure you have many friends that are still, you know, on the job and still serving. You know the climate of law enforcement now. It's a different climate than when you got in. What are they saying when you talk to your buddies? I mean, what's the feel just from NYPD? I mean, do they get a lot of support? Is there a lot of support out there in the community? Because I think in some areas of the country, and you know, Vic, that the support is hard because of all the stuff that, you know, which I think is a lot of 90% of it's unfair, or maybe 99% of it's unfair. What's the sentiment with officers?
Well, I only have now a handful of guys that are mm-hmm. friends that are still active, and they're kind of hanging on for their dear lives because mm-hmm. they're in situations where they still have to work because of, you know, financial obligations mm-hmm. or kids in school. Or the support's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot's changed, I guess, in the 10 years that I've been gone. New York has kind of gone back in the other direction crime-wise and quality of life, sad to say. So, I mean, I hope they retire soon. You know, it's a young man's game, especially in New York. You burn out quick.
Yeah.
Anything can happen at any time. So, I would think that, you know, being a cop in New York isn't what it used to be.
Now, what do you think some of the challenges are that law enforcement are facing now and what they're going to face in the future?
Well, New York has been a hotbed for terrorism. I mean, that's the place. I mean, obviously, they'll, you know, someone that's looking to wage jihad on the United States, they're going to go for the, you know, the easiest target. But New York is the icon. That's their goal. Even if it's planned or some kook, you know what I mean, that just thinks that he's going to be famous for the day and do something ridiculous. I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't.
Yeah. I want to shift a little bit, and I want you to talk about your book, Dickheads and Depatry, and Other Genius Ways to Die, for a little bit. And then we're going to get into your new book that I want you to talk about. So what prompted you? First of all, let me back up, Vic. Did you always have this desire to write? I mean, what was the catalyst for you to put pen to paper? Because I really do believe that there's a good story. Every officer out there, you know, every person in criminal justice has a story, has a book, well, at least one good book in them. So what was the catalyst with you? What did you always have this interest in writing? What was the catalyst to write these books?
I guess when I became a detective, the reports are longer, more detailed. It's not just, at time.
One line thing.
Yeah, he said this and she said this and he got arrested and she wants to press charges. No, so you're writing these detailed and complicated reports, especially when you're doing surveillance and documenting mm-hmm. everything and dotting your I's and crossing your T's. But when I retired, you know, it's a lot of my friends, cops and, you know, civilians said to me, you got so many stories. You know, you take this stuff for granted. People would get such a kick out of this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. Who wants to read this crap? But then I started, you know, putting pen to paper and I started sending it out to friends and people. Yeah. And I said, you got something there. So Dickheads and Debauchery, that was more of a comedy. It's just my take on life and the ridiculous things people do to shorten their lives, like, you know, running with the bulls or eating two turkey legs at Disney World, or, you know, going to an insane clown posse concert drunk. You know, it's
the good things. You know, it's the...
Yeah, just things to enhance your life.
Now, what about – so and I really do believe there's a lot of people out there, especially in criminal justice, you know, want to write. They want to write a book or you know, blog. What advice would you give to aspiring authors out there? Because you had to start somewhere, and I'm sure that you got a lot of naysayers, people saying, what the hell are you doing, dude? You're stupid. You're not going to – maybe not. I don't know. I'm just assuming. But, you know, men, especially – you know how brutal cops are, Vic? Oh. I mean, give me a friggin' break. So you start writing a book – and then I don't want to say I'm sure, but did you have any negativity, people saying, what the hell are you doing,
no,
dude?
But
this is stupid shit.
No, that'll come, because what's going to happen is I've posted in a lot of cop forums, NYPD forums, and a lot of it's salty older cops. And, you know, they'll buy the book, but they'll let you know about it one way or another. I mean, you know.
So advice.
Any cop, anybody can write a book, and any cop especially should write a book. Mm-hmm. Don't get hung up with writing in chronological order. Think of something funny or interesting or, you know, that you found exceptional and just start writing about it. Don't worry about a beginning, a middle, and an end. That'll come together. And don't worry about tying it all together. The book doesn't have to be in chronological order. It can be a thing of short stories. You know, don't get – and if you start getting writer's block and you get getting a headache, take a break. Walk away from it. It should be fun. It shouldn't be something that you're going to pull your hair out with a set of vice grips. Just take a step back and come back to it.
Now, I want to talk about your book, your new book, in a minute. But what do you do with – because I think it's – and you're the expert, Vic. It's a lot easier to publish a book. You can self-publish today than in years past, correct?
Oh yeah.
So what do you do? What advice would you give to authors out there? Should they self-publish? Should they go to a publishing company or what?
There's pros and cons to both, and you can go crazy going online and reading, you know, both sides of it. I went the self-publish route because I just, after I'm done writing something, and this is my second book, I want to get it out there. If it's good enough, it's going to make it. If it's not that good, it's not going to make it. I mean, the pros with the publishing is they're going to handle all your press. They're going to advertise for you. But Amazon pretty much does the same thing. The only difference is you have to advertise. You have to get it out there. You got to set up a web page. You got to do things like this, do interviews, issue a press release, do podcast interviews. That, I mean, it's only going to be as good as you get it out there.
Yeah. And you can't give up, man, because you're gonna have the naysayers, I imagine, and people that say you suck, and this is shit. But you gotta get up and you gotta keep going, right?
Oh, people are brutal.
Oh, I know that.
Oh yeah, it's like, you know, I'll go on Amazon and I'll look and I'm like, wow, another good review, and you know, just like you said, this sucks. I could have done this. I'm like, all right, well, thanks for the $9. You know what I mean? It's like,
so the new book, NYPD, Looking Through the Looking Glass, Stories from Inside America's Largest Police Department. I never knew. New York City has over 8 million people residing in its 5 boroughs, covering 300 square miles. So what's the book about? You don't have to give it all away, obviously, but what prompted you to write the book? What's the premise behind it?
I wanted to write a book about the funnier things that go on behind the scenes at the NYPD. There's a lot of stories and things that go on that would just shock people, and things the cops in New York are exposed to every day, and some of the outrageous stories and things that have gone on. And people say, no, that's not possible. It couldn't happen. Well,
yeah, you were there.
there or heard it from a very reliable source. Or, I mean, I could just give you a couple of quick story.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, here's what there's a one of the chapters is about guys getting themselves in trouble and practical jokes. And one story, and this is a famous one, and it happened a couple of years before I got hired. There was a lieutenant in a precinct that just was busting everybody's balls, just, you know, being a hard ass. And NYPD cops are different. You got to remember, you know, a precinct has over 200 guys in it.
Yeah.
So you can hide in plain sight. So somebody called the Secret Service up, posing as this lieutenant with a lot to say about Ronald Reagan, specifically to the point that he was thinking of shooting Ronald Reagan the next time he came to New York.
That's not good.
No, it's not good, and it's not right. But what happened was the Secret Service and Internal Affairs grabbed this lieutenant at his house, you know, and they take him to some black site somewhere, and they sweat.
Put a helmet on his, or put a bag on his head.
I didn't make this call. So he was somewhat clear to the charges, but every time the president came into town, it's a precautionary move, they sent him down to Police Plaza and took his guns for the day.
Oh, my God.
The retaliation that went on, there was a captain that was I write about that. Precincts, especially in bad neighborhoods, you're just happy the cops come to work every day.
Yeah.
And what'll happen is you'll get a young 30-something-year-old guy who never really was a cop and hit all the green lights test-wise, comes to a precinct, and he's got all these ideas. And instead of kind of taking the temperature of the precinct before he starts moving things around, they cannonball in and just start upheaving things in a precinct. So this particular guy, his check got stolen. And then someone cashed it in a liquor store in the precinct, which is kind of adding insult to injury. So internal affairs gets involved, and they're interviewing the liquor store owner, who obviously knows something's going on or is not involved in it. And he says, he's feigning, doesn't really remember. He's producing, shoddy business records. And, they're like, listen, we want to know who cashed that check. And he goes, is it a crime to be a moron? Basically ruined their case.
Now, talk about some of the nicknames, because cops, we have nicknames in my department. So what about when you talk about like some of the crazy nicknames that cops had?
There was a guy, TikTok, because you never knew when he was going to go off. And he was one of these guys. This is true. He's one of these guys. And it was great to work nights with this guy in the office, because he'd be doing the New York Times crossword puzzle while simultaneously answering Jeopardy questions. I mean, idiot savant. And he would always read, these classic novels. And he was one of these guys that read The Art of War. And he read it so much that it would go out the window when he felt that he was slighted. And a detective complained about his cigar smoke to a sergeant. So the sergeant basically told TikTok he couldn't smoke a cigar in the office anymore. So TikTok threw the guy's typewriter out a three-story window.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Now, now, I don't mean to sound like disrespectful, but I got to hear about the story that moving a corpse to avoid working late is not a good idea.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sure it is true, but what's the story behind that one?
There was a cop on a foot post, and he responded to a housing project for a cardiac. So he gets there first, and the EMTs are coming out of the apartment, and I think the super of the building was there, and the guy had died in his bed maybe an hour before. So he says, well, you're going to take the body? And they said, no. And he goes, well, why not? And he says, well, we only take the body if he dies in public view. You have to wait for the medical examiner now to officially declare him dead. Mm-hmm. So it was a Friday night, and this cop wants to go out. So he goes, come on, do me a favor, hook me up. And they go, no, we can't help you. You're going to have to sit here with the body, So the cop goes, all right. So the cop waits about a half hour and gets on his radio and calls in a cardiac. Well, the same two EMTs are still in the neighborhood, and they hear the same apartment. So what they're thinking is relatives came up to the apartment, saw what happened, and there's another heart attack. So these poor guys come rushing off the elevator, and in the hallway is the deceased now.
Oh, jeez.
Kind of sitting up because he's starting to go through rigor mortis. So there's an argument in the hallway, and the cop is like, bro, you're not going to believe this. He jumped up. He yelled something. He ran across the apartment, and he died again in the hallway.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yeah. He should have gotten fired. He didn't, but...
I was going to say, any discipline for that officer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. He got pummeled. But, yeah, I mean, this is 20-something years ago, closer to 30. So nowadays, nowadays he probably would have gotten locked up. There was another guy. You talk about moving a body, and this is in the book. Mm-hmm. He's watching the news. Now, this is according to him. He's watching the news, and they show a vacant lot over the river in New Jersey with a body found in a carpet. So he goes, I've seen that carpet before. So he calls up the homicide investigators over in Jersey, and he tells them this story how the day before his cousin asked him to move some furniture. So when he gets up to his cousin's apartment, there's a rug. Now, never once does he ask his cousin, why does this rug weigh 200 pounds? Or why are we going to fucking New Jersey to dump this thing, right?
Oh, my God.
So, he kept his job, and his cousin went to jail for a homicide. But, yeah, it's things like that, just like things that people would – there was another guy who worked in applicant investigation, and his mm-hmm. job was to fingerprint and interview and do the background checks on potential police candidates. Well, he had a buddy of his who had a criminal career. So what he goes and does is he fingerprints himself.
Oh, my God.
I figured you'd get a kick out of this because you'd understand it. So he submits his own fingerprints as his buddies. And, of course, it kicks back through the FBI. And, he got kicked out of the detective bureau and bounced to a precinct.
Oh, my God. So New York, is it 30-something thousand cops now?
Yeah, there was almost 40 at one time, but I think it's about 35 now. You're always going to get a couple of bad apples, Patrick.
Oh, of course you will. But I do believe, you know this, Vic, the overwhelming majority of NYPD officers, men and women, are good people.
Oh, absolutely.
Overwhelming.
I'm just telling the stories about a couple of knuckleheads.
I know. But the one thing I want to, in this environment, you know, I mean, there's a lot of police, you know, hate or whatever you want to call it. And yeah, the overwhelming majority of police officers out there, I always say this, whether it's NYPD, Denver PD, Dallas PD, are just people trying to do a difficult job in a difficult environment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But I love the stories because cops are cops, man. They do some crazy shit. I mean, they do some funny stuff. And that's one of the ways, you know, Vic, is that they deal with stress, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying what you just said was right or, you know, moving a body or something like that. But some of the other stuff is just hilarious. Like, you know, making fun of each other and filling lockers up with crap and having an explode, you know, putting OC in a car vent. I'm not saying I did that ever, but, you know.
Of course not.
So anything else you want to mention about the book?
What's that?
Anything else you want to mention about the new book?
What would you like to know?
You want, buddy. Tell some more stories.
Stories all day. There's a chapter in there that covers, you know, some guys that had alcohol problems. There was a guy that he was going through a divorce and he worked as a security guard on the side. So he was working at one of the museums in Manhattan and, you know, morning shift comes and he doesn't open the door to the museum. So he's an older guy. They think he had a heart attack. They get into the museum. They find him passed out drunk in a blanket with about a case of beer, you know, beer cans all around him, surrounded by cavemen.
Oh, my God.
You know, so like standing up underneath Cro-Magnon man, you know.
Well, so hopefully he got some help for his problem.
Well, the NYPD had a place called The Farm. Mm-hmm. And The Farm is this place, I've never been to it, but it's an alcohol rehabilitation facility in upstate New York. And NYPD cops are not allowed to drink. So unless you're in a detective squad or something, you're doing a case, you're allowed to have like one beer, but they don't want you drinking. Big no-no. Mm-hmm. So if you're caught drinking alcohol, you're terminated unless you go up to The Farm.
Wow.
So, yeah. So The Farm, we've heard stories of like forced farm labor up there and guys with VIP suites up there because they've been up there so often. And it's a department so friggin' big. That yeah. It's just, I mean, just guys disappear off the radar and then you see them again. And
how do you manage? I've always wondered that with like departments like NYPD or Dallas or LAPD. Well, that you obviously do a good job or, you know, managing, but I'm thinking, my God, I mean, you know, 30 something thousand cops, like you said, I mean, somebody could just, I mean, how the hell do you know who you're working with half the time? I mean, I'm sure the precincts are small enough where you get to know people, but.
Well, not really. I mean, a small command will probably be about 100 guys.
Wow. So there's a chance that you wouldn't even know the people on the other end of the week or whatever are working, right?
Oh, no. Well, in a precinct, you'll know guys by face.
Yeah.
Or if someone gets in trouble or something happens to somebody, oh, yeah, I know that guy because everyone wears a name tag. So yeah. You're like, oh, all right, I know that guy, you know. But I get asked all the time. I my cousin worked in Brooklyn, and I'm like, that's like the other end of the world. I used to call it the asshole end of Brooklyn because Brooklyn's bad. I'll tell you what, I used to think the Bronx and Harlem was bad. You go out to Brooklyn's the major leagues. Brooklyn is bad.
It's just call load or types of crime or what?
Call load, people load. It's bad. It's just so big, and it's the people there will give you a harder time than the other two boroughs.
Huh. Interesting. So I asked you before, I mean, some of the, what's the biggest crime? Maybe that's a stupid question, but is it property crimes? Is it crimes against people? I mean, what is it now in New York City?
I've been out of it 10 years. I mean, yeah. back in the day, I mean, on volume. Yeah. I mean, shoplifting and yeah. I mean, New York City used to get well over 100,000 cars stolen in the 90s.
Holy
I mean,
shit. Is that just in a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a year. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it was like shooting fish in a barrel.
So you have a special task force or detectives working auto theft, right?
I mean, oh, yeah. I worked in the auto crime division for my last 10 years. But, I mean, precincts have guys specifically doing that. Then each borough has a team of guys doing that. And then you have the auto crime division doing that. I mean, it's layered.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah. I mean, it's New York City is like an NYPD is like an army. It really is. I mean, and they can shut down and put a dent in a lot of things.
Yeah. And the one thing I didn't do before we started, thank you for your service, Vic.
Well, thank you.
Well, you 20 years, decorated 20 years in NYPD. I mean, we're just scratching the surface with your stories. I can't imagine. I mean, I have stories, but NYPD.
Funny stories in there. I just don't want to come off that, you know, the NYPD is a bunch of clowns.
No.
Yeah, cherry picking some incidents of ridiculous things. All right, here's another story that just came to mind. There was a guy who wanted to safeguard his gun when he was going out one night. He didn't want to bring it with him. So he put his 5-shot .38 in the one place he didn't think a burglar would look, in his oven. So 4 hours and 9 beers later, he comes home. He figures he's going to make himself a snack.
He's going to heat some stuff up.
Yep. Goes in the next room, and the oven starts shooting at him. So he had to run out of his history. He had to run out of his house and call 911 on himself to get the cops to come because his gun was going off the oven.
And for those of you who don't know what Vic is talking about, I know that the rounds are in there and the rounds heat up and they're going to cause the reaction that causes the rounds to go off.
Oh, yeah. Blew his gun to smithereens.
That's hilarious. I can imagine. What was the explanation when the cops get there? The uniform. The uniforms get there and the guy's like, oh, somebody's in my house shooting at me or what? I mean, did he put it together that he put... Okay.
From what I was told, he knew what he did, but then you have to explain things like in NYPD, you get involved in anything off duty. There's a duty captain that shows up, and the duty captain is going to examine you and make sure, A, you're fit for duty. You know, I mean, if you're drunk, they find you unfit for duty, and then they put you what's called a modified assignment. You get your guns pulled. Then he's going to write what's called a 49 that's a who, what, where, when, why that goes down to one police plaza in the Puzzle Palace, and then the Puzzle Palace usually puzzle decides palace. What they're going to do to you.
So this guy tried to heat up his gun to eat it, and so I imagine they took his guns.
I don't think he got thumped. I don't think – well, he couldn't have that gun back because it was blown to pieces. But, no, I don't think he got in that much trouble. I mean, he lost some vacation time, but it wasn't like when they put you what's called the rubber gun squad. They take your gun from you, and then they stick you in one of the Siberian outposts at the NYPD and never fucking heard from again. Dude, I'm serious.
Oh, I believe it. I mean, they're just like, okay, this guy's screwed up. We're going to stick him over here on the outskirts, and we'll just hope, you know, maybe we'll hear from him at some point during the year, but we're going to stick him out here because he screwed up so bad.
Oh, no, years. No. They are in no rush to get you back to full duty. If you fuck up, no.
Oh, my God. So is there any redemption? Can you come back from Siberia?
They're still going to pay you. Yeah. They're going to run out the clock with you. They're basically... And it could be years till you're cleared of an investigation you don't get a fair and speedy trial in NYPD. You're put on modified assignment, which everybody calls the rubber gun squad. Then you're sent to, one of the Siberian outposts in the middle of nowhere, like the Whitestone Pound where all the stolen cars and impounded cars go. First of all, you're in the flight path of LaGuardia Airport, so you've got planes landing over your head every 4 minutes, okay?
So you don't hear anything all day.
You don't hear anything. Then they put you in these sentry booths. In the middle of nowhere with these guarding these abandoned cars, and then you have this lost colony of feral cats that live out there that, I mean, they're freaking aggressive. I mean, they'll pull the shit out of you. They'll come popping out underneath the car if you're not paying attention. So it's a wonder more guys don't lose their friggin' minds working out there.
But some guys probably like it, right? Because they're
old timers will volunteer to work. It's not everybody that works there has been in trouble. We
volunteer to go to Siberia.
Oh, dude! And then you'll run into somebody like, "Help me, take me back with you." You know what I mean? It's like I can't. You know, it's like a movie. Like someone's in jail and you can't help them.
It's fucking hilarious. So, if people want to reach out to you, sir, how do they do it?
I've got a Facebook page, NYPD Through the Looking Glass, and I've got a blog, and I don't really know how to get to it, but you can Google it. It's Vic Ferrari at WordPress. So if you want to get in touch with me, don't curse at me or threaten me or, you know, say you want to talk, that's fine. I'm not into getting threatened.
Now, your new book is on, both books are on Amazon, right?
Yes.
And we'll have that linked up in the show notes. So head over there, buy Vic's books. They're funny stories. And like Vic said, he's exactly right. These are just some of the funny stories that he dealt with and came across in his 20-year career. Thank you to all NYPD that are serving right now, if they're listening. Brave men and women serving a great city. You still there, Vic?
Oh, no. I'm
any parting...
Dancing and I'm taking your lead.
Any parting words of wisdom, sir?
I want to thank you for the opportunity, for letting me come back on the show again. And any cops listening, please be careful, stay safe. And you'll get a kick out of this book, guys in law enforcement. It's funny stuff.
Thank you, Vic. You're welcome back anytime, buddy.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I really appreciate it.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. And reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.